I'm Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Remember the South Dade room, South Dixie room, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I do celebrate my 41st birthday, God willing, on the 25th. And I think I'm going to be here until we discuss until March 1st. And at least I want to say, you know, God willing. You know, man plans and God laughs. So I'm going to talk a little bit about something. That's my plan, to talk about something for about 45 minutes, and then we'll all leave, and everything will be wonderful. This is my deal. When I say this is my deal, this is my experience. I can promise it may not be your experience. You don't have to have this experience. You don't have to do anything I do. You know, you're alcoholics. Do whatever the fuck you want to do. It doesn't matter to me. You know. You want to get offended by what I say? Feel free. You want to drink over what I say? Feel free to drink and tell everybody that you drank because I said something. I mentioned God or Jesus or something. Just blame me. I'm fully capable of taking it. I have no problem with that. Don't worry about it. I want to welcome the newcomers. I'm sure there'll be some old-timers here that say, don't listen to me because I'm going to upset you and drive you out of the rooms. Because if I'm going to talk, I'm going to talk about God. Because I'm going to talk about my experience. And so I'm gonna throw out some. I can tell you this, my first sponsor, I've had four sponsors. Bob Sullivan for about 7 years, and then he died of cancer. And then Joe Snyder for about 10 or something years, and he died of emphysema. And then John Glenn for about 18 or 19 years. I'm going to talk a lot about John Glenn, and my current sponsor is Dion. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what my journey has been all about, my deal, my journey, my experience. Now, I can tell you this. My first sponsor once said to me, Russ, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. Now, to me, I understand what that means. I get that. I've had people come in and say, what does that mean? And then I have to spend 20 minutes sort of explaining that, you know, and you know, we're all alcoholics, so I know you're all brilliant. I know there's a bunch of people in here somewhere in this room that are saying, this guy's full of shit, I should be doing the talking, you know what I mean? Be my guest, you know? And because we're all so smart. And one thing we're definitely all smart about, right, is ourselves. Nobody knows me. This guy doesn't know me, you know? Nobody knows you better than you. I understand that. That's why this isn't about you. This is going to be about me, you know? You know, my sponsor said, you know, you're selfish. You're selfish. All you do is think about yourself. He says, all you do is think about yourself. He says, well, what am I supposed to do? He says, well, you got to go to meetings and you got to talk. You know, so what do I talk about? He says, you talk about yourself. I said, I don't get it. You know what I mean? You know, Dr. Bob, in his story, Dr. Bob's Nightmare, he closes by saying, if you have some sort of intellectual pride, which keeps you from understanding what we're trying to tell you in this deal, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. Mm-hmm. And what you'll find is, there's a great line I have. I send out an email every week. It's a weekly email with all the Zoom meetings and different meetings I go to and a lot of different resources at their talks and stuff like that. And one of the quotes I have in the email is this quote, and it says, a man or a woman, if I say man, I mean man or woman, a man can look at something 999 times and look at it the 1,000th time and see it for the first time. It is possible to read the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous, and somebody asks you, have you read the big book? And you say yes, and you think you're telling the truth. And then 10 years later, read a line in the big book at 3 o'clock in the morning when you think your life is over, and all of a sudden have an epiphany and see it for the first time and say, that's it. That's it. That's the deal. And see it for the first time. Because we are informed. Our intelligence is informed by our experience. You can hear all sorts of speakers. If there's 200 people, 150 people in this room, there's 150 stories. 150 people are hearing 150 things. And there are people that are hearing shit that I'm not even saying, but they think I'm saying it. And there are people that are not hearing anything. You know, they're just closed off. You know, and that's just the way it is. You know, you hear what you want to hear. You discount what you don't want to hear. You think you read the big book, but you toss away lines like "there is one who has all power." And, you know, you toss away lines like utterly, you know, abandon yourself to God. You toss away all that shit and you get to the jaywalker and that makes sense to you. And whatever it is, you know, and the way we get a new perspective in here, according to the big book, and I found this is true according to my life. So everything I'm talking about is I found this true. The way we get a new perspective, they say, is unbelievably painful. It's by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. It's not because people like us, we have a wonderful sponsor. It's by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of my self-sufficiency. One of the things I was interested in recently, I've been sober, you know, it's going to be 41 years. Recently, I saw this line in the big book. I mean, in the Dr. Bob and Goodall Timers, I started off by talking about this. I happened to read this for the 10 millionth time. The line by Dr. Bob in the last paragraph of the story. If you have some sort of intellectual pride, which keeps you from understanding what we're trying to push through your dense skull, which keeps you from understanding what we're really trying to say here, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father has never let you down. I've read that hundreds of times. I've talked about it hundreds of times. Thought I understood it. I actually never really understood it. So about a month ago, I'm reading it, and I realized that I didn't really understand it because I didn't understand the word intellectual pride. See, sometimes you can understand something, and when you're pressed, you say, well, what do you think he means by intellectual pride? Because he says intellectual pride is the thing that will keep you from understanding what they're really trying to say. And so I thought about that for a while, and I came to an understanding which made a lot of sense to me. And the reason it made a lot of sense to me is because my experience with staying sober and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and having what I hope is emotional sobriety, my experience has informed me when I think about myself and what I've been through, what that means, intellectual pride. Because I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was going for a PhD in algebraic topology. I went to law school, became a division chief in the state's attorney's office, a professor in a law school. And I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. And I can tell you something, nobody has more of a right to explain to you how fucking brilliant I am than me. And I made a fucking mess of my life long before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with all of those degrees. Or as my first sponsor used to say, when I said, these are my degrees, he said, well, Russ, retinal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. And so I came to an understanding of what I know what Dr. Bob was saying, who was a doctor and was fucked up. There's no alcoholic in the big book who wasn't brilliant and smart. No alcoholic here that isn't brilliant and smart. So here's the question. If you're brilliant and you're smart, and I believe you all are, why are you so fucked up? No, why are you so fucked up? You ought to ask yourself, if you're so fucking brilliant and you're so smart and you're your best fan and you would never do anything unless you thought it was to your benefit and the best thing, I wouldn't do anything unless I thought I was going to gain something. Why have you made such a fucking mess out of your life? Just bad breaks and misunderstandings? Carl Menninger, in the book Man Against Himself, written in 1935, said, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. I mean, is there something going on inside of you because you're an alcoholic? It's not the drinking. Believe me, it's not the drinking. You know why I know it's not the drinking? Because most of the people I fucked over and most of the things I did in my life that was fucking stupid and got myself in big trouble, I did a cold stone sober. or somebody else told me when I was driving, he said, it should be stone cold sober. Yep. Whatever the fuck I was sober. Most of the people I hurt with my mouth and my inaction and lying and cheating and stealing, even after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I did it sober. Because the drinking is just a symptom of my disease. My disease centers, my dis-ease centers in my mind, not my body. Has to do with my, and you see, they don't arrest you for driving while being selfish. They don't arrest you for driving while spending money you don't have to buy shit you don't need to impress people you don't like. They don't arrest you for driving while you're fearful or while you're lusting after somebody else's wife. They don't arrest you for shit like you get in all sorts of other trouble. You have a miserable life. They don't arrest you for that. And eventually you drink or you drug or you do something stupid. And that's the shit that you don't really see, that they don't arrest you for. That's the stuff that gets you drinking after 15 years. You know, the most common thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I see after 41, you know what's the most common thing? Guys that put time together in AA who drink again. How long have you been in AA? Oh, I've been around AA for 35 years. Well, how long are you sober? 3 days. I'm not putting you down if that's your deal. I'm just telling you, you ought to ask yourself about that. The most common thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is people that come in here, listen to all this, read the big book, even do some or all of the steps, even stay sober for 5, 6, 7, 10 years, 15 years, and then drink again. The most common thing in the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what's the rarest thing in Alcoholics Anonymous? The rarest thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. A man with 40 years who is sober and excited and enthusiastic about his sobriety and is happy with his sobriety and grateful to God. The rarest thing in fucking AA. The rarest thing. In Vision for You, it says, here and there, once in a while, a former drinker, dry at the moment, and it doesn't say it's got only 2 days or 5 days or 6 years or whatever it is. A former drinker, dry at the moment, says, feel better, look better, having a better time. We smile at such Sally. We know he was going to try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll try the old game again. He'll know loneliness as few do. He'll be at the jumping off place. Do you believe that there are people that are sober for many years that aren't happy? Do you think that sort of character exists? Guy with 20, 25 years that's not happy with his sobriety? How you doing? I'm hanging in there. One fucking day at a time. Hanging. I'm hanging. One day at a time. I'm sober. I haven't had a drink in 30 years. How you doing? Hang, is that what this is all about? So you can hang in there? You know, the fact is I came in, I drank myself. This is how I did the first step. I drank myself into the first step, which I want to tell you something. I enthusiastically endorse that way of coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I say just drink your way into it or die. You know, you don't want to come in here not really, you're having a doubt, or maybe you're not sure, or you like the coffee, or sobriety feels good. You know, there are people that come in here because they want what we have, and they're willing to go to any length to get it. You know, I read that, you know, when I read the book when I came in, I read the Jaywalker. Anybody read the Jaywalker? You know the Jaywalker? I don't know what else it was saying in the book, but when I read the Jaywalker, I said, let me tell you how bad it was for me. This is my story. You know, by the way, you know what the big book says I'm supposed to talk about? This is seldom talked about in AA. What the big book says I'm supposed to talk about, it says each individual in his own way and in his own language talks about how he developed his relationship with God. That's what I'm supposed to talk about. You know what people presumably don't want to hear about in AA? Well, they want to hear about the problems, they want to hear about the bullshit, and they don't want to hear about that stuff because it may drive away The newcomer. Man, shit, if that shit is going to drive you away, you might as well walk out right now and drive away. Because I'll tell you, there's going to come a point in time where the only thing that's going to save your life between drinking and not drinking, or screwing up and not screwing up, is going to be your relationship with God, if you even have one. Or whether he's just sitting in a glove compartment somewhere. I'm just giving you my experience. The only thing I have about this, the understandings I have today, is I have, and this is the way you're going to develop your intelligence about yourself, is I've got 41 years of repeated humiliations in the final court. I'm 72 years old. I came when I was 31. I have 41 years of repeated humiliations and crushing of my self-sufficiency. Nothing wrong with 5 years of repeated humiliations and crushing of your self-sufficiency. Nothing wrong with 10 years of repeated humiliations and, you know, crushing of yourself. But I got 41 years of crushing, 41 years of learning what's really going on. Now, even though I say that, 10 years from now, I'll probably see other things. Maybe I'll get a little more crushings of my self-sufficiency. But I believe what they say in the long version of the prayer, the serenity prayer. Understanding and accepting that hardship is a pathway to peace. There is a long version of the serenity prayer where we understand that hardship, repeated humiliation, learning the value of suffering is the answer. You know, I can tell you, you buy into this thing, it ain't going to be all fun and games. It just isn't, you know? Yeah, you can go, it's nice to go to a banquet or to a convention and have people make you laugh, and I can make people laugh. You know, there are people here that know I can tell a joke and make people laugh and be humorous. It's nice to have a great time in AA and say, man, wasn't that guy a great speaker, man? He was so funny and everything like that. But the truth of the matter is when people get sober, it's not necessarily all fun and games. You know, people come in here, some people are ready and some people are not ready. Some people want what we have and they're willing to go to any length to get it. I came in here, let me tell you how bad it was for me. I got on my knees on December 25th, 1980. I gave my life to Jesus at 3 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning, asked him to come into my life, and I'm a Jewish kid from Great Neck, New York. Now listen, the only way I can explain that, if you're not Jewish, you wouldn't maybe understand that, is the only way that happens is if you're fucking desperate. You understand what I'm saying? Some guys are saying here, well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. And I was raised a Christian. I wouldn't do that. Well, listen. The only reason you wouldn't do that is because you weren't where I was on December 25th, 1980. If you were where I was at December 25th, if you were at the jumping off place and you thought your life was over and it was never going to be better again, I was so happy to invite Jesus in my life. I'm just lucky that Hare Krishnas didn't show up, because I'd be at an airport right now with a fucking tambourine, you know? So, unless you have some sort of intellectual pride which keeps you from understanding what's going on here, I feel sorry for you. So what I understand, what Dr. Bob was trying to tell me is intellectual pride is believing that you actually know something. And therefore, no matter what you hear or say, you run it through the filter of this. I ain't going to do it unless it makes sense to me. How's this? I'm not going to do it unless it makes sense to me. Now, assuming the second step is right, and God will restore you to sanity, therefore you are insane. Because if the second step is we come to believe that God will and can restore us to sanity, that must mean you're insane, because the only way you can be restored to sanity is if you're fucking nuts in the first place. If you're already sane, so unless you admit to yourself somehow, even though without knowing it, that you're insane, that there is a power that can restore you to sanity. So, if you come in here, you don't come in here because you're well. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not Well People's Anonymous. It's a bunch of crazy people trying to not drink and stay sober and derive some sort of happiness, having no fucking idea what they're doing. And trying to see whether there's somebody that can help them that they can identify with. And not everybody's in that deal. Not everybody's unified on that deal. One guy went to a meeting in the Sunset Room. And in the meeting, he said this. He says, you know, I've been in about a month. I have no friends. Nobody will help me. I'm all alone. I don't have anybody to talk to. Nobody cares about me. He said, it was a heartbreaking story. My heart went out to him. I had about a year. I went up to him after the meeting. I said, hey, listen. Listen, we go out for lunch at Sizzlers right after this with me and my sponsor and five guys. Why don't you come with us? And he said to me, oh, that's okay. I'm going to go home and watch TV. And I turned to my sponsor and I looked at him and he said, Russell, some people want help. Other people just want attention. It may take you years. You may have to be on Relay like I was for 8 years to determine the difference between people that really want sobriety and people that just want attention or just want to feel better. You know, it may take you years to hone that sort of discernment to understand that. But I know this. The only reason I'm sober is that some way, some point at time, I decided to do shit and follow directions and do what I was told, even though it, you ready for this? Didn't make sense to me. I decided, like my sponsor used to tell me all the time, Russell, your best thinking on your best day got you where you are right now. He says, why don't you just listen to somebody else and do it? I don't really give a shit what you want. He gave me a 24-hour book. He said, I want you to read this each day. Get on your knees and ask God's help to stay sober. I want you to do that every single day. I don't remember him asking me whether I believed in God. I just don't remember that conversation. I remember at one time I said I wasn't going to hold hands to say the Lord's Prayer because I didn't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late. Too late. You mean a hypocrite is say one thing and you do another thing? Too fucking late. You're an alcoholic. You busted hypocrite long time ago. Long time ago, buddy. You just do it. You know what I mean? That's the real interesting thing. How many people are willing to do shit that they're told to do even though they don't like it and they don't understand it and they have intellectual pride? And how many people, when they hear a talk like this, will just walk out the door because they didn't come here for that bullshit because it doesn't make sense to them? In Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, they show a 12-step call done by a guy named Dr. Bob Smith. And Dr. Bob Smith called on a guy named Clarence, the brewmaster, who became very well known with many years sobriety in AA. And the first question he asked Clarence, this is Dr. Bob 12-stepping somebody. Dr. Bob, he says, do you believe in God? He's sitting on a hospital bed. The guy's 35 years old. He's like 135 pounds. It's in the book. You can read it. He says, do you believe in God, young fella? Do you believe in God, young fella? First question, right off the bat. Clarence says, what does that have to do with it? Dr. Bob says, everything. Everything. So here's the, and so now we're in this wonderful fellowship 80 years later. Well, people will tell you if you mention God in Amy, you'll chase away the newcomers. You know, well, I'm of a different opinion. Because if they walk out the room because they don't want to hear about God, believe me, they'll walk out of the room for all sorts of other reasons too. You understand? They're going to walk anyway. They're going to, I'll tell you what, they don't suffer from the disease I suffer from. I wasn't fucking going anywhere. I walked in here, I read the Jaywalker. I was well done. Put a fork in it. Without any question, I knew one thing. I was powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. And I was told by my sponsor, I wasn't told by my sponsor, if you drink, you can always come back. That wasn't what I was told. I was told, you drink, you may never come back. I absolutely believed to this day, right now at 41 years, I believe if I drink, I ain't never making it back. I never thought I would make it back if I drank. I never thought that was an option. I mean, drinking is an option, but I never thought it was an option for me. And so everything I read in the big book for the first 5 or 10 years, whatever I read, what I really heard in my mind is, don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink even if your ass falls off. The most important thing is drinking. They're handing out medallions for drinking, 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 drinking. And the primary motivation for 90% of the shit I did, Relay for 8 years, intergroup banquet chairman for 2 years, doing service, helping people, sponsoring people. The primary reason I did all that is because I understood if I didn't do that stuff, I might drink. I might drink. And what I read was a book that said the most important thing is not drinking. So let me tell you the truth about that in my own life. My own life. And I did the God thing. I would tell you I believed in God. I believed in the higher power. I would use the word God. I would say all that. I would pray during the meetings. I might even talk about God. But the truth is, God was like, he was there, but it was like it said in the 12 and 12 in step 7. It says, I believed, I had some sort of faith that there was a higher power, but he wasn't the central fact of my life. It wasn't like they say in the big book, you want to be rocked in the fourth dimension of existence, experience much of heaven. The great fact is this and nothing less, that God must be the central fact of your life. You must be convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. He will do for you what you can't do for yourself. Once you make that sincere decision for God, there's no half measures avail you nothing. He either is or he isn't. Make a decision. What is your decision going to be? There is no middle of the road solution. Once you make that decision, remarkable things will happen for you. Being all powerful, he will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. And his work is that you go out there and you try to use maximum effort to help other people because you're now part of the royal priesthood. And that's what we do. He is your father. You know, you are the children. He is your new employer. This is your job. That's the deal. I didn't believe that way. You understand what I'm saying? I believed enough so I could say the Lord's Prayer to me and hold hands. I can maybe talk about it. I can say I believe in a higher power, HP or something like that. But it wasn't. It was just like one more thing. You know, there were the steps. There were my sponsor. There was this wonderful fellowship. And then somewhere along the line, and there was God. He's around there somewhere. He's like in the trunk of my car. He's in the glove compartment. He's next to the spare tire. 3 o'clock in the morning, all else fails, get on your knees and pray to him. You know, he was there. I wasn't an atheist. I wasn't an agnostic. You know? I wasn't one of these guys that turned away. You know, it says if you're an atheist, it says there's a chapter of agnostic, which basically stands for the fact this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. If a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life, like good orderly direction or something like that, we would have solved a long time ago, but didn't. That's why we wrote a book, because there's no power. We don't have the power to stick with this thing. We don't have the power to stay sober. We don't have the power to keep on the diet. The not drinking diet. We had to find a power. And that means wrote a book where we're going to talk about God, because God is everything. That's what this whole thing is about. You're on a new level of trusting and believing in God. You never apologize for God. You're never ashamed about God. Instead, you let him demonstrate in your life what he can be. You know, you just don't do that. But we might not be able to find out for you. Well, we hang out with you. That's not the point. God will determine who you're going to hang out, because your real reliance must be on God. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Tough thing to swallow when you're sober 5 years and 10 years, and you think you're doing the AA program because they're giving you medallions, but God's not really the central factor in your life. And if God's not the central fact in your life, you're worshiping other things. You're worshiping the things you always worship. You're worshiping the sex, the girl, the boy, the money, the power, the cars, the job, your weight, how you look, your skin color, you know, whether you're buffed or not. You're worshiping the things of this world. And God is just something on the side when the shit hits the fan and the IRS comes to audit you and the check bounces and you get fired and you realize that none of those things can help you. None of those things can save you because they're not permanent. And then what happens is somewhere along the line, for me, it happened at 10 years. I know people it happens at 23 years. I know one person it happened at 37 years. At some point along the line, the plug in the jug doesn't work. At some point in time, the jaywalker is not enough. The jaywalker not drinking will keep you around treading water. The jaywalker, go to meetings and do this, may keep you here 5 years longer than you would have if you drank again, because out of routine or whatever, because you're still on the not drinking thing, but it's like the old Marlboro commercials, are you smoking more and enjoying it less? And then AA becomes less something you're enthusiastic about and you're excited about, but you fall into the trap where you're not happy with your sobriety. But as a true alcoholic, you don't know you're not happy with your sobriety. You just don't know. Because the funny thing is, the amazing thing about alcoholics is, even though I used to say to my sponsor, I'm sensitive, he said, you're not sensitive. Great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. The amazing thing about alcoholics is how what a miserable life they can lead and somehow still manage to think that they're doing okay. If there's anything that's proven by the alcoholic experience, is you can sort of like have no money, have no job, have nothing, have no respect, feel alone and miserable in your life, and somehow, some way, you think you're doing great. That's the one thing. That's why we all come in here 10 years later than we should have come in here. You know, that's why we take so long and we got to be beat up so hard, and why we have to hit bottom. Because through all sorts of delusion and excuses and selfishness, we tell ourselves it's their fault, we're better than, because we're insane, because we can't really see what's going on. And so somehow, some way, maybe you get to a point, and I got to a point of 10 years, where, how do you do that? I get people all the time. Most of the people I sponsor now have 20, 30 years. 10, 15, 30 years, you know? And they're sober, and they sponsor other people, and they're going to meetings. They're just not happy with their sobriety. They're doing time in AA. One more day, one day at a time, one day at a time, but they're not happy with their sobriety. They may have a little happiness here and there. You know what they have? They've settled. Just like it says in step 6 and 7, they've settled. You know why? Because they're not, number one, they may not even realize that there's something more. When you're 10 years sober like I was, and you've done it all, and you're working hard, and you're sponsoring everything that moves, and you've done the steps and everything, and you're talking and teaching the steps. I've been doing this shit, you know, for like ever since I was 7 years sober. And you're doing all this stuff, you know. And let me tell you something. I've 41 years. I've been divorced. I've been married. I'm married 41 years. I got 7 grandchildren, 1 on the way, 8. You know, 4 children, remarried, cancer twice. I've been, you just imagine my own business. I've been broke. I've been with money, without money. You imagine all the shit that can happen to you. In 40 years of sobriety, I've been through it all, except death, and almost that. You know what I mean? Losing people, having people betray you, bounce checks, whatever it is. Imagine all the stuff you go through. And you can go through a lot of shit and still not get the point. But if you're lucky, you run into a John Glenn. He used to call himself Future Astronaut. John Glenn, Future Astronaut. And I want to tell you a little bit about John Glenn so you understand where I'm coming from. Okay? So what happens, I got to a point of 10 years sobriety that I wasn't happy with my sobriety, but I didn't know I wasn't happy with my sobriety. I get people that call me up, you know, and they got 10 or 15 years. I had one that called me up. She had 17 years. She said, I don't know what it is. I'm still bothered by people. I'm worried about this, and I worry about that, and I'm pissed off at my husband, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just pissed, you know what I mean? I sponsor people and everything. I'm not happy. I got this problem, that problem. I don't, you know, but they know how to speak at AA meetings, and they sponsor me, and they got 17 years, you know, who's going to tell them anything? And they're just, I said, so you're upset. He says, yeah, I'm upset. So you're mad. Yeah, I'm mad. So you're angry. Yeah, I'm angry. So you're not happy with what's going on. No, I'm not happy with what's going on. You're really pissed off. You're really unhappy. He says, yeah, I'm really unhappy. You want to know how you can get better. You know, you realize there's something wrong with you and you need help, right? He says, yeah, I realize you need help. I realize there's something wrong with me. And I don't know how to get out of it. I said, hey, welcome to the sixth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're on the road to becoming entirely ready to have God remove the shit that's stopping you. You became entirely ready to stop drinking 17 years ago. But you weren't entirely ready to get rid of all the other fucking chains that's holding you down on the planet Earth and stopping you from being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. Let me tell you a line in the Big Book, which is the most important line in the Big Book, which the Big Book is all about. And no matter how many steps you do, no matter what you do, you will never achieve true happiness. Listen, let me tell you, I was telling somebody this the other day, we were discussing. I said, I got 41 years, I'm 72 years of age, I've never been happy in my entire life. I have no bucket list. I have no bucket list. You say to me, is there anything you'd like to do, anything you need to do, anything you're excited, anything you haven't done that you want? Nothing. Zero. You know why I'm here? Because I would rather be here than any place else. I'm just one beggar showing another beggar how to get a crust of bread. This is my life. This is what God wants me to do. I have a God that has saved my life, that I love, and he loves me, and he's personal to me. He's realer to me than you are. He's helped me out of more jams than you could possibly imagine. Miracles, stuff that I never got. And it's all because I left it up to him. You know, I got that God. You know what I mean? Why wouldn't I be? I'm so excited that when I see so many people that are so sad because they don't have that, because they don't understand what it says in the Big Book. The one line that's the most important line in the entire Big Book, and every step in the Big Book, and everything you do in the Big Book is designed to have you lock onto this line, and you don't even know the line. You think you know it, and you don't know it. And here's the line. There is one who has all power. There is one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Well, I turned it over to HP. I guess that's a cool way of saying that you're in AA and you're kind of cool, but you know, you're not a fucking fanatic like Russell. Right? You know, I turned over my higher power, you know, because you're still too embarrassed. I guess you're ashamed of him. I know the Big Book says we never apologize. God's a way of apologizing for talking about God, because it's acceptable in AA if you say HP. It's not acceptable if you say God, because you're still worried about what other people think about you, aren't you? That's why you don't talk about God. That's why you don't ask questions about God, because you're worried that other people will think you're a fanatic like me. Unfortunately for you, you will never attain the promise. You know that promise which says we will lose concern of what other people think about us? See, here's the problem. Here's the buy-off. You either devote your life to God, sacrifice your entire life to God, and not use it as just a statement. There is one who has all power. That one is God, and you find him now. But actually believe that he exists. Believe that God either exists or he doesn't. What's your decision going to be? Believe that he's important, that he exists, and make him the central fact of your life, and be convinced that he lives in your hearts and lives, in which is indeed miraculous, and believe that your job is to be a maximum. You either believe that and not worry about what people at the 12-step house thinks about you on October 11, 2022, and you can be yourself, or you continue to be a scared, thumb-sucking fucking crybaby. That's the choice. There is no middle-of-the-road solution. You're either for God or you're for other people's approval. You're either worried about what other people think about you and their approval, or you are more concerned with God. And you believe he exists. Now, how do you get there? How do you get there? I mean, I wasn't like this in 10 years. Remember, I had a crisis of faith. Well, you get there by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of your self-sufficiency. You know, it's not a white light or anything. So they had me start, for me, how did I develop my, they had me start going to Bible study. You think if I walked through the door, I said, yeah, I go to Bible, I would have not gone. Now, even though they did, even though the founders, between 1935 and 1939, that's all they did. The books they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, the book of James. It wouldn't happen, but at 10 years, I was ready. I didn't want to do it. It didn't make sense to me, but I did it anyway. sat next to a guy named John Glenn. When my second sponsor died, he was a Baptist preacher and a missionary, and he was sober 50 years. My second sponsor died. I was sitting with men who were 60, 70, 80, and 90 years old. They were studying the Bible, which was source material for the big book. They were talking about the same things we talk about. The only thing is, to them, God was, they were serious about God. There was nobody in that group that was saying, well, if they talked to me about God, I would have walked out there. That was the whole thing. The centerpiece of their life was God. Let me tell you something. The man or woman you'll be in the next 10 years will be dependent upon people you hang out with, the books you read. And I'll tell you something. The bottom line is this, and this is the truth. If you want what most people will never achieve in AA, will never achieve in AA, you better be ready to do what most people will never do. You know, not drinking and going to meetings will only get you so far. You know, you got to somehow get to the point where there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Where you believe that's true, that I have to get close to God. I have to find God. You know what it says in the seventh step? I'm not saying stuff that isn't in the book. It may not be in the rooms you go to. It says you can believe and have a belief in God in the seventh step. But if he's not the centerpiece of your life, where you're thinking about him all the time, where he's the number one thing in your life, your belief will remain barren. It won't. You will have no power. You'll not have no power to deal with. You will always be worried. You will always be anxious. You will always be scared. You will always be subject to the vagaries of life and the whims of circumstance and worried about what's going to happen to you. And you will never, ever escape this disease. You will never have the escape velocity that's needed to escape this disease, because you will be pulled back into the alcoholism by its gravitational pull. Because God knows the things of this world are surrounding you every day. They play on you 24/7. And maybe for 1 hour a day, if you go to a meeting every day, you might escape the worry about the things of this world, but probably not, because in most AA meetings, they don't talk about stuff like this. And that's why you have a group of people where a large group of people where most of the people end up drinking after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, are unhappy with their sobriety. And maybe there's one guy with 30 or 40 years that's excited about his sobriety, because he's excited about the fact he's great. Bill Wilson says in Alcoholics Anonymous number 2, Bill Dotson, the man on the bed, you know, the man on the bed came to believe. This is the line. This is Bill. Don't blame me. Some people said, man, if I was only sponsored by Bill, this is Bill Wilson. Bill Dotson, the man on the bed, said, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, something a person ought to have, and I was trying to find out what the story was. And one day, Bill Wilson was in my kitchen. He was talking to my wife, Henrietta, and I heard him say this. Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. And I realized Bill was very, very grateful. Very, very grateful. And he believed everything he had. He gave full credit and credit only to God. And he focused on God. That's the deal. That's what he said. Dr. Bob just was just as adamant about that. Why do you think they have in the book, we encourage church membership? Knowing how alcoholics feel, why do you think they put in the book, we encourage church membership? As a way of getting closer to God. That's the 11th step. Why do you think they put in the book, most of us attend such organizations? Why do you think they put that in the book, knowing that alcoholics didn't like that stuff? You know why they put it in the book? Because that's what they did. That's why it's in the big book. Of course, that's the extra credit stuff. That's the stuff you don't read. That's the stuff that you think, well, yeah, you could do that, but that's not really important. Let me tell you something. The stuff that you don't think is important, the stuff that doesn't make sense to you, that's the stuff that's going to separate you out between the men and the boys. That's the stuff that's going to separate you out between the Olympians and the non-Olympians, between the spectators in AA and the guys that are on the field playing the game. So, in any event, that's my experience. You can take it or leave it. It's just another AA meeting. Thank you very much.